Oh, dear students, we are so happy that you made it this far because arguably this is the most important chapter of the entire semester. Why? Because as a lucky member of the great American economic machine, when you trade your life for your paycheck, chances are your employer is going to be offering you some kind of employer-sponsored retirement plan. And if not, then at least a traditional IRA or Roth IRA are available to you. And folks, this is how you're going to fund your retirement. I know, you don't want to think about it, but wait till we get to the next chapter. Because now we're ready to tackle investing in mutual funds. And when we teach investing, some people like to put mutual funds before stocks and bonds, and other people like to put mutual funds after stocks and bonds. So it's just advantages and disadvantages to both. I like to do a little overview and then do mutual funds and then go back and look at stocks and bonds. We do that in Business 123, Introduction to Investments. But in the 121 class, we go through bonds, then we go through stocks, and we finally see that, oh, yes, this is most likely how we, the little people, will be investing in our stocks and bonds. Because the real name of a mutual fund is investment company. Yeah, that's the legal term. Everyone knows them as mutual funds, and you're probably never going to hear investment company unless you work in the industry. But these are the investments for the masses. They are not perfect. No investment is. And you'll hear people say horrible things about mutual funds, and, you know, there are disadvantages. But on the whole, the advantages outweigh the disadvantages for the vast majority of people. Now, some people will go it alone and buy their own stocks and bonds and take Business 123, Introduction to Investments, please, before you do so. But most are not. Most people are too busy, you know, with their lives. They don't have the time or the inclination or necessarily the resources to do it. So that's why mutual funds are around. And in fact, there's an old industry saying, mutual funds will bore you to wealth. Not bad, huh? Yeah, they're boring. Oh, well, so what? Some of them aren't. The aggressive growth funds that we'll take a look at in our second lecture. But yes, this is the way most of us working grunts are going to be investing over the long term. Slide number two. What is a mutual fund? Well, it's an investment chosen by people who pool their money, hence the term mutual, to buy stocks, bonds, and other financial securities, which is a silly name that people don't like. In fact, we used to call the Business 123 class investments and securities. And students would say, but I'm not an administration of justice. No, not that type of security. A security is a financial investment, and there's a more rigorous definition that we learn about in the Introduction to Investments class, but that's all you have to know for now. And as we said, the legal term is investment company. But you don't have to remember that. Actually, I'll ask you to, on the exam, but you'll quickly forget it because nobody uses it. But these are the two things we do not want you to forget these two major cool, fantastic, fabulous things about mutual funds. Because your friends now are going to start asking you, because now you're the investment guru for your friends and family. Why invest in a mutual fund? Well, you get two wonderful things. Professional money management and instant diversification. Yes. And these, as we'll see, can be extremely fabulous, and sometimes they don't work out exactly the way we want them to work out, but for the most part they do. Each fund has a specific objective, and there are almost 12,000 funds to choose from. I mean, give me a break. I know. You walk down the aisle in the supermarket. Are there 12,000 different breakfast cereals? I know it seems that way, right? But no. Are there 12,000 different types of cars? No. How come there are 12,000 different mutual funds? Well, there's various reasons. One of which we'll cover in our next presentation when we try to get our arms around the industry, which is a very difficult thing to do because it is now huge. In fact, mutual funds hold more money on the behalf of other people, on behalf of their investors, than banks or life insurance companies. They are the largest, what it's called, financial intermediary. It's not their money. They're holding it for somebody else. Many people choose mutual funds for their retirement accounts. Right. We'll discuss 401ks, 403bs, the traditional IRA, the Roth IRA, in detail in our next presentation. Well, actually, I'm sorry, next chapter, but we have a little detour before we get there. We have a little alternative investments, so this is coming attractions. Slide number 3. Do you remember this slide from chapter 11? I made this slide. I'm very proud of this slide because I'm not very artistic. And here we are, folks. We're the little people, and more of them are women. Which is cool, because women are finally realizing, don't rely on the guys. No. They saw great-grandmom or grandmom get by a great-grandpa or grandpop, and they don't want that to happen to them. So now we give our $50, $100 a month, more if we can afford it, to the people in the top hats. They're the money managers. They're the professional managers who are managing our money. The mutual fund managers, the portfolio counselors, they go by various names. And more of them are women. That's a woman. And why is that so cool? Well, because it has already been statistically shown that women make better investors than men, even though men dominate the industry. But that's changing. Why do women make better investors? Well, I'll let you come up with your theories about why it is so. But my feeling is that women are just more patient. They're not as testosterone-induced or poisoned as men are, who try to make a killing, throw the Hail Mary pass, swing for the fences. Well, you baseball fans, what happens when you swing for the fences? Yeah, you strike out a lot. And what the professional money managers do is they make a pool of money that I know doesn't really look like a pool. It looks more like a potato, but it's a pool of money. And since there are millions of these people sending billions of dollars, these pools are pretty darn big. Hence the term mutual fund. And then if they buy stocks, it's called a stock mutual fund. Tricky how that works, isn't it? If they buy bonds, then it's called a bond mutual fund. If they buy the short-term investments, instruments, vehicles, otherwise known as cash, euphemistically known as cash, then it's called a money market mutual fund. But usually the mutual fund disappears and you just hear people say money market. Got your money in stocks? No, I got it all in the money market. And then what we begin to see is the bifurcation. You like that word? Bifurcation? Or balkanization? The breaking up of the world into balanced mutual funds, where we invest in stocks and bonds. Well, this is just the beginning, and we'll see that in our next presentation in much more detail. But as we said, here are the two wonderful things you get: professional money management, the people in the top hats, and instant diversification. Why? Because they don't buy 5 stocks or 5 bonds. They buy 100, 200, 500 stocks or bonds. So if one company goes Enron or Kodak, then it's not the end of the world for your portfolio. You understand? Your portfolio is instantly diversified. Your $50 buys 25 cents of Home Depot and 30 cents of Apple and 10 cents of IBM. That's how it works. They take care of all the accounting, folks. Slide number 4. Why do investors purchase mutual funds? I think I told you. Professional money management. Excuse me. My apologies. Professional money management and instant diversification. Well, now, obviously, some managers are better than others, right? And what has happened? It's changing slowly. But many mutual funds would have what is called the star manager. They would have one person in charge. And if that person was good, great. Fantastic. If that person wasn't so good, well, not so good. And so what I look for, and what more and more companies are doing, is a team, a management team, not a committee where everyone has to decide and the consensus has to be built. No, a team where they all work together, but they make their own choices. And so one person might be buying Microsoft, and the other person might be selling Microsoft, and that's perfectly legitimate. and they work it out amongst themselves. And hence, you get varying viewpoints. I like, that's the kind of companies I like, but there are others that have the star manager, the one-person manager, who have done very, very well for their investors, so there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. And then, as we said, you get that instant diversification. Investors' funds are pooled, used to purchase a variety of investments, which gives some safety that is difficult for individuals to investors to obtain on their own. Not impossible, but just difficult. And then third, and I wish I had made this up. I didn't. I got this from the Wealthy Barber. The PETA factor is low. What is PETA? Pain in the... All right. And that's so true, folks. You know, if you do take Business 123, you're going to be astounded at the unbelievable wealth of information that is pushed into your brain when you start learning about stocks. There's just so much to know, and there are just so many different stocks to think of, so many different types. And the same thing is true, not as much, but the same thing is true for bonds. So it's just difficult. It's not impossible, and some people enjoy the process. Others, as we said, are living their lives. They don't have time for this stuff. You know, I got the kids. Like, you know, the new job's a hassle. So they don't want to do it, and they shouldn't. They shouldn't have to do it. Do you build your own car in the backyard? Do you make your own shoes? Do you self-insure yourself? No, you go to a car company, you go to a shoe company, insurance company. So why not go to an investment company, mutual fund, for your investments? Okay? And so those are the advantages. So let's take a look on slide number 5 of the growth of the mutual fund industry. What we see is an explosion of mutual funds between 1980 and 2000. In 1940, when the Investment Company Act of 1940 was created, there were about 70 mutual funds. And the truth was, folks, the government was a little wary about these things. They were not, they weren't quite sure what to do with these mutual funds. And so in 1940, the Investment Company Act of 1940, it shows that the Republirats and the Demagogues can get together and play nice in the sandbox and do things for the good of the country. It's happened in the past. Let's hope it happens in the future. And so the industry was set up back in 1940, even though it had been around for about 15 years before that. And the industry grew and grew and grew until about 1980, when this explosion started to happen. Why is that? We'll take a look at that in the next couple of presentations, because the competition just got fiercer and fiercer and fiercer. Yeah, because remember insurance companies? Are they not-for-profit organizations? No. Are mutual funds non-profit organizations? No, they're making money. And some of them make a lot of money, folks. And then look between 1990 and 2000, when the market went hyperkinetic, when stocks went in two directions, up and way up. And then there was a leveling off of the growth, but no, they still grow and continue. And as of December 2017, there were 11,783 mutual funds. Now, this data comes from the ICI, the Investment Company Institute, ICI.org, and their fact book comes out around August, September, October sometimes, usually September. So you have to wait a little while before you get the data, but it's worth it. And for those of you who love statistics and love to learn about the investment company world, the mutual fund world, this is the mother load. This is the place to go. And their fact book this is what I do, right? And some other people might use it for insomnia and whatever. It's useful in either case. Slide number 6. How about some transactions? What kind of mutual fund transactions are they? Where do we buy them? Well, we can buy them through a broker, which expect to pay for the broker's services, and we'll see how that's done. You can buy them directly from the investment company, and many investment companies do their best to avoid the brokers because they don't have to share any money with them. But some companies, that's the way they're designed. They're designed to go directly to the individual, such as Vanguard does that. And some mutual fund companies don't want to go directly to the individual. They want you to have a broker. And there's some controversy over why that is true. There are some studies that show that people who do have financial advisors, whatever you want to call us, brokers and financial representatives, they tend to do better over time than folks who don't have one. And again, we'll leave it to your imagination, your thought processes as to why. I think it's because they just don't, they have somebody to bounce their ideas off of, especially when people panic. When the market goes down, you have somebody to talk to who says, now look, we've been here before. You know, the history tells us that these are very common. They don't happen that often, but they do happen. And as we've already discussed, you know, this is the worst time to sell, but that's what people do. That's what people do. They panic at the worst possible moment. Ooh, is it too late to get in? Yeah. Ooh, is it too late to get out? Yeah. Right. But in my humble opinion, the best way is through automatic contributions. You set it up so that it comes out of your paycheck, 401k, 403b, or your checking account, Roth IRA, traditional IRA, and then it happens every paycheck, every month, whatever, dollar cost averaging, which we discussed way back in Chapter 11. We'll take a look at it again this chapter. I know it's a horrible name, but I've tried to figure out a better name. I can't come up with a better name. But just periodic investing on automatic, auto contributions, because then you don't have to worry. Is it a good time to invest? Is it a bad time to invest? It doesn't matter. How do you sell it? Well, call up your broker, go right directly through the mutual fund. They're all online, folks. You don't have to talk to your broker. But and the best way, in my humble opinion, again, is through automatic withdrawals. You have it automatically. You have them automatically withdraw the money and send it electronically to your checking account. So here's the deal. You ready? You ready? You start investing, you young folks. $50, $100 per month, 30, 40 years. And then you automatically withdraw $2,000 or $3,000 per month for the rest of your life. Sound good? Huh? Wait a minute. Did I mention that there are no guarantees? Always be sure to read the fine print. Be afraid. Be very afraid. Make sure you go through those illustrations in chapters 11, 12, and 13, and then in 14. Okay, so we talked about the cool things about mutual funds. What are the downsides? Well, you know, nothing's free, right? Except for the air we breathe, and even that has the cost of associated with it. Annual operating expenses. These people are not doing this for their health. Well, I guess they are, because if you don't get food to eat, you get sick. So I guess they're doing it for their health in a roundabout way. No, these mutual funds are charging you an annual operating expense. All mutual funds do that. It's a percentage of the fund's asset value. And in the 123 class, we look at the fees in great detail. But we don't do it so much here because I used to, and people just would kind of, eyes would glaze over and they'd get all the questions wrong on the exam, so I figured, oh well, wait till they get to 123, just so they know they're being charged, okay? It ranges from less than 0.5% to 2% or more. So what does that mean? 0.5% means every year you'll be charged 50 cents for every $100 you have in your account. If it's 2%, then that's $2 for every $100. Now, I like mutual funds that have lower fees. And there are some that have very low fees, index funds and what are called index funds and exchange-traded funds, which we'll take a look at later on. But I like a mutual fund that does research and charges a lower fee. The index funds, the ETFs, as we'll see, don't do any research. And that reason, the reason they don't do any research is because they don't believe they can do a very good job doing research. So why not just pick all the funds, all the stocks or all the bonds? And there's some controversy, some research for and against that we discuss in more detail later on, and then in detail in 120 in the introduction to investments class. But realize you're getting charged, right? They're charging you. And if the people in the top hats are doing their job correctly, it is not an inexpensive proposition. They need to be going around the world, because the world is global. They need to be knocking on the doors of all the companies that they think they're going to invest in, plus their competitors, plus their suppliers, plus their customers, their banks. And, you know, there's lots of different companies in different countries around the world with different languages and different cultures. And so good mutual fund companies now need, in my humble opinion, a worldwide global research organization. Yeah. Well, one example. I think we've talked about Coca-Cola, right? Coca-Cola is available in virtually every country in the world. And they make 80% of their money, 80% of their sales come outside the United States. So in other words, if every United Stater, if every Estadounidense, that's what the Mexicans call it, Estadounidense, United Stater, if every United States citizen decided they were never going to drink Coca-Cola again, Coke would still be a huge company. They'd still be a multinational, global, large cap behemoth. That means a big company. And so you, as a research organization, need to understand that. You need to get out there and do that research. That's why it costs. Now, what happens if you go with a financial advisor? Well, you're going to pay some kind of commission, some kind of sales load. They go by various names, but think of it as sometimes it's called a sales charge, sales load, sales commission. They go by various names, but this was originally used to compensate the financial representative, but they've changed a little bit as we've seen. It changed a lot. And then some funds are no load, which means they don't have an upfront fee, but that doesn't mean they're not high fee. Some have very high fees and will wind up costing you more over the long term than a mutual fund that does charge you a commission. So everybody's different. Everything's different. You have to look at each one separately. And here on slide number 8 are the different types of loads. And this is what I was referring to when I said we go into excruciating detail. And most people just eyes glaze over and they quickly forget about it. But I wish you would learn this. At least write it down on your one page of notes that you're going to use when you take the exam, right? That's what we ask the face-to-face students to do. There are 3 major types of load funds, but there are various flavors, variations on these 3 major types. The upfront fee, sometimes called Class A, sometimes called Class 1, that charge an upfront fee, but usually have lower annual operating expenses. There are the back-end sales charge, back-end loads, Class B, Class 2. They have a back-end fee that goes down over time called a contingent deferred sales charge. I love that name, contingent. Feels good when you say it. Say it. Say contingent. Kind of say it feels like lumpia, if you can feel it in the body. Anyway, it goes down over time, but they have higher annual operating expenses. So they can wind up costing you more than the A shares. And then they're now they're called load funds. The Class C shares, they don't have an upfront fee, they don't have a back-end fee, but they have higher annual fees. And the Securities and Exchange Commission said, you can't call these no-load funds because the load has been sneaked in as an annual operating expense. And so the industry goes, all right, we'll call them load funds. Now, there are other funds called no-load funds. And there are 2 major types. Again, there are many variations of this. The advisor no-load funds and what are called the true. Now, that's not a legal term or anything, but that's what the industry calls them, so I put it in quotes. I think it's a silly name. But the no-load funds are sometimes called Class F, Class I, and the advisor does not, the mutual fund does not charge an upfront fee, does not charge a back-end fee. You get low annual operating expenses. But then the advisor charges 1 or upwards of 2% to manage the account. Sometimes called a wrap account, sometimes called a wealth management account. It goes by various names. But they have this wonderful ability to say to you, as Mr. and Ms. John Q. Investment Public, we don't charge you an upfront fee. We don't charge you a back-end fee. We give you lower annual operating expenses, and we tack on an extra 1% or 2% for the rest of your life. And I got to tell you, folks, I don't like these things, but they are the way now. That's the way that brokers are charging for their services. I'm real old school. I still think the A shares are the best deal for the clients over the long term, assuming you're going to hold on to the mutual fund. If you're not, if you're going to move around, then yeah, I guess it'll wind up costing you less to go with the 1% or 2% a year. But still, I don't think it's in the best interest of the clients. I wouldn't want to buy it if I were a client, and I wouldn't want to sell it to anybody. But everyone's different, right? So listen to somebody else who says, Pione doesn't know what he's talking about. Yeah, all right. Anyway, ask them how much it's going to cost them over the long term, and then they'll sort of go... And then the companies that we talked about that go directly to the public, bypass the middleman, don't go with the advisor, listen to us, we know what we're talking about. They are called true no-load funds. But again, that doesn't mean the overall fees are low. Over time, a no-load fund can wind up costing you more in fees than a load fund. So, as they say, caveat emptor, or call me, let's talk. You know, I can talk about this a whole lot longer than any reasonable person would ever want to listen to. So at least put these in your notes for the exam, all right? I know, Pione, what's asking me. But still, this is important stuff, and you are the financial guru for your friends and family, and they're going to ask you. They're going to say, well, this broker said that he's not going to charge me an upfront fee or a back-end fee, but he has some kind of wealth management fee. What's he charging me? What's she charging me? Okay, so go back over this and realize that no investment alternative is perfect, but when it comes to the vast majority of us, mutual funds are the way to go. Now, in our next presentation, we're going to do our best to get our arms around this industry. And, folks, it ain't easy. The industry is huge. The types of mutual funds just has exploded. But we're going to take a look at the major categories and get ready for a sip from the fire hose. See you in our next presentation, dear students.